Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Law, the host of Sandbox Radio. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. This holiday episode, Epiphany, was recorded in front of a packed house at ACT Theater in Seattle on December 29th, 2014. It features special guests Lisa Koch and Peggy Platt, the 17-piece Cascadia Big Band, and an appearance by NPR's rockstar librarian, Seattle's own Nancy Pearl, playing herself in the latest episode of Scott Augustine's series, Cousin Katie. We also wrap up Paul Mullen's Angel Noir series, Markheim, put our twist on a poem by A.A. Milne and a short story by L. Frank Baum, get another home run from writer Wayne Raleigh, and much more. So settle in and get ready, because here we go with Epiphany.
Sandbox Radio, we'll stay all day. In the backyard, we'll play. Jump into our sandbox.
We build castles and kings, words become things.
Sandbox Radio. Sandbox Radio.
Downtown Rain City, Seattle. Tonight, the final episode of Markheim by Paul Mullen. The continuing adventures of Cousin Katie by Scott Augustine. Special guests Lisa Koch and Peggy Platt. Music from Sandbox Radio favorites Cascadia Big Band. Much, much more. Plus, all your favorite Sandbox Radio players and music from the Sandbox Radio Orchestra, led by Jose Juicy Gonzalez. So, sit back and relax as we take you into the world of Sandbox Radio Live.
Sandbox Radio.
Seattle, December 2017, South Lake Union.
Lieutenant, what's the story on the monster?
Well, we know he's in there, but he's too damn fortified.
Do we have him trapped?
Well, sort of.
Can we starve him out?
No, he still has his drones to bring him fresh supplies.
But we have him contained?
Again, not really. He still has the internet. He's got saplings. We can't cut it.
Damn it. So he's still as much a threat as ever.
Maybe worse. I think it's time to consider drastic measures.
Are we talking Plan K?
Yes, Major. I think it's time we brought in...
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan. My cousin Katie from Ketchikan. She's the girl that you call when you need a friendly smile. Small town girl, cute as pie. She'll make you fall in love. My cousin Katie from Ketchikan. My cousin Katie.
Katie, I'm so glad you came over for coffee. I've missed you.
I missed you too, Lena.
How's pod life?
It's just grand. It's like living in an acorn shell. All day long, it's like my walls are reaching in to give me a hug.
Who could that be at this hour?
Ma'am, I'm Lieutenant Marmot.
Marmot?
It's not really my name. We use code. I need to talk to Little Brown Bat.
Who?
He means me.
Katie, you're in the Resistance?
Looks like it, doesn't it?
How did that happen?
Well...
Katie, get into my windowless van.
What, the French toast?
Just get in.
Oh, it's you!
since we don't use real names.
You're in the resistance? Well, I guess that makes sense.
They call me the Oyster, and I'm here to recruit you, Katie.
What?
The end. My only friend, the end.
There's a devil upriver, Katie. A smiling evil. A false god showing no human decency or restraint. It's a river of lies, not literacy.
Was that an Apocalypse Now reference?
I'm a librarian. It was a Heart of Darkness reference.
Got it. But I don't get it.
Katie, no monopoly is a benign monopoly. And when the accounting department starts to decide what gets published, it's pretty much the end of civilization as we know it.
Okay, Oyster, I'm in.
I knew I could count on you. Here's how it'll work. I'll be leaving you instructions at drop points around the city.
Drop points?
You know those little free libraries?
Yeah. The little book houses.
That's where I'll leave the messages.
How will I know which one?
Listen to my radio broadcast. I'll give you clues. So if I say, small appliances is the tale of one woman's quest to find a skinny fridge, you'd think, skinny fridge rhymes with Finny Ridge.
Clever.
And if I said, my dog has fleas is an engrossing mystery set in a pet grooming shop, and the book's many plots fit as tightly together as keys and locks,
I would go to the Ballard Locks.
How about, Itchy Britches is an engrossing coming-of-age story that unfolds in a burlap pants factory in Wales from 1702 through 1714.
Easy. Those were the years Anne Stewart sat on the British throne as Queen Anne. I would look on Queen Anne Hill. But Oyster, are things really that bad? You know, with the website, which must not be named.
Oh, Katie, I don't want to spoil the last chapter, but let's just say I wouldn't hold my breath for a sequel.
Little Brown Bat, we think you may be our last hope of neutralizing the monster, since you have a connection.
Monster?
He means Jimmy Bozo.
It's actually...
Wait, Katie, you know Jeff Bezos? How?
Well, remember when I first moved to town and joined the Crafty Crafters Club?
Excuse me.
Hello.
What is that you're making?
Oh, it's a picture of the late painter Bob Ross made out of mung beans.
Why?
Well, I want eventually to make legume portraits of all the famous Alaskans.
Like Sarah Palin?
Oh, yeah, right.
What's so funny?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Bonobo. We of the Upper North find it hilarious that you lower 48ers haven't figured out the joke yet.
Joke?
Can you keep a secret?
Yeah.
Sarah Palin is Andy Kaufman.
That explains so much.
And I recognized you right away. You run that computer mail order catalog.
Well, it's more like
a... It's named for a river, right? The Yangtze?
No.
Mississippi? Danube? Volga?
No.
Lake Erie? No, that's not a river.
Amazon?
No, that's not it. It'll come to me.
Katie, do you like to play skee-ball?
Do I ever?
You've got to help us, Little Brown.
Oh, Lieutenant Marmot, I've been thinking, I love Seattle, but it's only my adopted city. But maybe this isn't any of my business.
No! It's the end!
Marco, are you all right?
No, I just got my rent jacked up.
How much?
$20,000 a month.
Oh!
I'm going to have to live in White Center or Bothell or Cedro Woolley. I think I'd rather die.
Marco, no!
Capitol Hill smells like Jägermeister these days.
the other day I went to get a sandwich, and the only thing I could find was a pop-up faux deco diner boutique food truck selling Cajun Thai fusion smoked dolphin tongue croissants. And all I wanted was a damn turkey on whole wheat.
Oh, Seattle isn't Seattle anymore, and that bastard Bezos is to blame.
All right, Marmot. I can't sit by on the sidelines any longer. Let's do this.
Deep in the heart of Amazon headquarters.
Who is it? Who dares enter my inner sanctum?
Mr. Beezy, it's me.
Katie?
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan.
Yeah, it's me.
How'd you get in? I got some pretty tight security.
Well, I'm pretty resourceful. In Alaska, you gotta learn how to open doors that get stuck.
Oh, Katie, you didn't pee on it, did you?
Oh, of course not. That is an urban myth. To open a frozen lock, what you need is a laser pointer, a hunk of cubic zirconium, and a tuning fork. Peeing is only gonna make it worse. And, Mr. Beatbox, you may have state-of-the-art security, but you also have employees who are a little too fond of pomegranate wasabi martinis.
You aren't here to talk about craft projects.
No. I'm here to talk about what's going on right now in this city.
Maybe I don't want to talk about what's going on right now. Maybe I want to talk about the future of this city.
You like to change the subject, Mr. Beezy Boy.
I want to show you something. Step inside Elevator Prime.
Sure, what else am I doing tonight? Whoa!
Behold.
Wow. This is a great view of Seattle. It's almost as good as the top of the Space Needle. Wait, oh, hang on. This is the top of the Space Needle.
Take a good look. In 5 years, it shall be unrecognizable.
Uh-huh. More of those condos?
I'm tearing down those condos.
Because they're ugly?
Because they aren't ugly enough.
What, the double fudge brownies?
I want an architecture so brutal that people will gape in horror.
How are you gonna do that, Mr. Bichon Frise?
I have Olya Grinkonovich, the last living Soviet reconstructionist building designer. She was an evil genius. Her office towers and apartments brought grown men and women to tears.
Oh!
And you see that thing rising like an enormous boob from the earth?
You mean Queen Anne Hill?
I'm gonna level it to the ground. And I think I'll drain Lake Union for storage. Lighted balloons will fill the night sky with logos and advertisements.
You're gonna be busy.
Oh, work, work, work. Too serious am I. Do you want to do some shopping? Some online shopping?
No, Mr. Bubbles, I don't.
You can buy a book, or hand lotion, or live crickets, or sea monkeys. We have it all.
You dance a mean foxtrot, Bobo. But eventually the truth comes knock, knock, knocking on Grandma's door. You can bury a body under the ice, but spring will reveal your dirty deeds. I've been on to you for some time now.
What do you mean, Katie?
It was all out in broad daylight from the start, like you were bragging.
Have I already said? What do you mean, Katie?
The name, Amazon.
Oh, yes, that.
It's not the Amazon itself you named this company for. It's what swims in the Amazon. The parasitic kangaroo fish.
Yes, it is true. I am the kangaroo. And I have indeed swum up Seattle's stream of urine and have now lodged myself in the tender urethra of the Emerald City.
Your real goal was never to build a business empire, but to destroy Seattle.
True.
You probably know I have a tape recorder.
I figured as much.
I'll take it to the shareholders, and they will oust you.
Yes, they will, but that will take a little time. Time enough for me to do one last thing.
What's that?
Relocate Amazon headquarters.
Oh? To where exactly?
Ketchikan, Alaska.
No! You can't!
Yes, I can.
But the airport is tiny.
I'll build a new one.
There aren't enough people.
I'll bring them in.
But the bears and the moose.
I'll shoot them. I'll shoot every last one.
All right, take the tape and all the evidence. Just leave Alaska alone.
Hmm. In gratitude, I'll email you a gift certificate for the Cheesecake Factory.
Why, Mr. Beehive? Why do you hate Seattle so much?
Why? Seattle stole the only thing I ever loved.
What?
Spring, 1982, Florida.
Hey, Jeff, we gotta talk.
Oh, I can't believe it. When you said yes to going to the prom with me, I was the happiest guy ever. I got a mustard yellow tux, and yes, the cummerbund matches the shoes. Oh, and I'm gonna get a haircut just like the guys in Flock of Seagulls.
Jeff, I can't go to the prom with you.
Oh, but Mandy.
My dad got a job in Seattle. We're moving next week.
What? Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle.
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 Ouch.
I vowed that day to destroy the city that took Mandy from me. The Emerald City.
Okay, that makes sense, but maybe there's another way.
Is this a trick?
What if I could give you back the prom you missed?
How?
I'll pretend to be Mandy and you be you at 18.
I don't know. That sounds weird.
Slurry?
It's Siri, Katie. Siri. How can I help you?
Can you play some music you might hear at a high school prom in 1982?
Yes, Katie.
Can I have this dance, Jeff?
Yeah. Sure thing, Mandy.
Thanks for the ride, Jehoshaphat Bebop!
Katie!
Mission accomplished.
Was that Jeff Bezos?
What happened?
Oh, we slow danced and then sat in the back of his car and ate some chips and split a Mickey's big mouth.
And that was it? You just slow danced with him?
And he agreed to use his vast obscene fortune to restore Seattle?
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
So, we're safe?
For now, but there are plenty of other rich and dangerous people in the world. We will all have to be vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I might be getting some hand lotion and live crickets delivered here. I couldn't pass up the free shipping.
Katie!
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan! My cousin Katie!
Nancy Pearl! Rockstar librarian. The following message is brought to you by the wild imaginings of Sandbox Radio.
Come in. Clamp? Sieve? Carving knife?
Penelope?
Blood pressure's dropping, Doctor.
Reverse clavicle with a back twist, pronto.
What are you doing wearing scrubs in your apartment? And why are you operating on the President of the United States of America?
Shut the door, dude. You're letting in microbes.
Who's that other guy on the table next to him?
Vladimir Putin.
Whoa. I think you're taking that online course a little too far.
No, dude. It's the only way to fully realize world peace. You see how we're mixing their blood, then filtering it back into their bloodstreams?
Yeah.
Pressure's at zero, Doctor. I need a retractor.
You mean this cute little doodad?
My cousin Katie from Ketchikan.
That's it. Thank you, Katie. Dude, hold Mr. Putin's colostomy bag. He seems to be waking.
Listen, I hate to say it, but this is all a little cray-cray.
It's not cray-cray, dude. It's cutting-edge radio.
Sandbox Radio.
Oh, I get it. Sandbox Radio.
Right you are, dude. But Sandbox Radio could go the way of the dodo without your support. Did you know that ticket revenue doesn't nearly cover the cost of production? Sandbox Radio is innovative Northwest radio that's on the cusp of national recognition.
But what can an average listener do to help?
You can make a tax-deductible contribution tonight in the lobby.
Is there a limit to how much I can contribute? I sure could use a deduction.
Nope. You can also go to our website, sandboxradio.org. Click the support page and donate from there. And Don't forget to buy tickets to our upcoming shows for you and your friends.
Yeah, okay. But I tend to get comps. What else can I do?
Listen to Sandbox Radio podcasts. You can stream them from our website, in iTunes, or through Stitcher. Then post reviews and 5-star ratings to help drive us up the feed.
You got it, Penelope.
Gee, what's that sexy, faraway rumbling sound?
Doctor! There's a herd of endangered elephants stampeding this way!
Begin the levitation process.
Levitation commencing in 5, 4...
Wait, we're levitating?
2, 1...
Hang on, dude!
Whoa!
Doctor?
Everyone, stay away from the windows.
Look, a train! Cool!
Hey, I can see my pod from here.
Well, those are the sheep from that Samuel Beckett radio show.
Whales approaching from Bainbridge Island.
Whoa, whales.
Help keep Sandbox Radio alive, ingenious, and alarming. Donate and listen today at sandboxradio.org.
Just listen to what radio can do. Wahoo!
A Letter from Santa Claus by Mark Twain.
My dear Susie Clemens, I have received and read all the letters which you and your little baby sister have written me. I can read your and your sister's jagged and fantastic marks without any trouble at all. But I had trouble with those letters which you dictated through your mother. For I am a foreigner and cannot read English writing well. You will find that I made no mistakes about the things which you ordered in your own letters. I went down your chimney at midnight when you were asleep and delivered them all myself. And kissed both of you, too. But there were one or two small orders which I could not fill because we ran out of stock. There was a word or two in your mama's letter which I took to be a trunk full of doll's clothes. Is that it? I will call at your kitchen door about 9 o'clock this morning to inquire. But I must not see anybody, and I must not speak to anybody but you. When the kitchen doorbell rings, your brother George must be blindfolded and sent to the door. You will tell George he must walk on tiptoe and not speak, otherwise he will die. Someday. Then you must go up to the nursery and stand on a chair on the nurse's bed and put your ear to the speaking tube that leads down to the kitchen. And when I whistle through it, you must speak through the tube and say, "Welcome, Santa Claus." Then I will ask whether it was a trunk you ordered or not. If you say it was, I shall ask you what color you want the trunk to be. And then you must tell me every single thing in detail which you want the trunk to contain. Then, when I say goodbye and a Merry Christmas to my little Susie Clemens, you must say goodbye, old Santa Claus. I thank you very much. Then you must go down into the library and make George close all the doors. And everybody must keep still for a little while. I will go to the moon and get those things. and in a few minutes I will come down the chimney that belongs to the fireplace that is in the hall, if it is a trunk you want, because I couldn't get such a thing as a trunk down the nursery chimney, you know? If I should leave any snow in the hall, you must tell George to sweep it into the fireplace, for I haven't time to do such things. George must not use a broom but a rag, or else he will die. Someday. If my boot should leave a stain on the marble, leave it there, always, in memory of my visit. And whenever you look at it, or show it to anybody, you must let it remind you to be a good little girl. Whenever you're naughty and someone points to that mark which your good old Santa Claus's boots made on the marble, what will you say, my sweetheart? Goodbye, for a few minutes, till I come down to the world and ring the kitchen doorbell. Your loving Santa Claus, whom people sometimes call the Man in the Moon.
How you doing?
White trash in the USA, overalls and tooth decay. All my uncles and my aunts were extras in Deliverance. White trash with a W. Brothers can be cousins too. Everybody knows you can't take out white trash. You can dress us up, but you can't take out white trash.
Thank you so much. Thank you. For those of you who do not know us, we are the Spuds. I'm Juanita Spud, and this is my mama Yuomi. And we are thrilled to be here with Sandbox Radio Live.
Well, we're thrilled to be here, but I got some questions.
What's the problem?
Okay, my problem is with this title, Sandbox. I mean, what you doing putting your radio in a sandbox? I mean, it's going to get grit in all kinds of places. Just like you as a person don't want to be in a sandbox because you get grit in all kinds of places.
Yeah.
Can't do the dials or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the second thing is that a kitty might pee on you.
Well, that's... I had not thought about that, Mama. See, the thing is, that's just their name, is the Sandbox Radio.
Oh, like we're the Spud.
Kind of, yes. It's just a name.
Oh.
Now, they do this frequently, and this particular episode is called Epiphany.
Oh, named after that nice little girl who used to sing in the malls.
No, that's Tiffany, Mama, and I can't believe you can remember her.
Well, I remember her, right, because I hated her.
Yeah, I didn't like her either. She was cute, though, anyway, but... Yeah, well, epiphany, yeah, I don't know if you know what that means, but it's a sudden revelation. Something just pops right into your brain, and it's important.
Oh, I had one of those then.
You did?
I had one of those just before we went on.
An epiphany?
Yes, I was in the dressing room.
Yes.
And all of a sudden it just hit me that I was wearing 5 pounds of vinyl, and I had not used the toddy yet.
Well, maybe we should just move it along.
Okay. Oh, my heart is so full.
Yes, it is.
When I think about how we got started, so many years ago. You was just 16, I was 21. Now we're so rich and successful. Well, scratch that anyway. I mean, here's all these people sitting around in a sandbox, you know. When you could just go home and turn it on the radio.
Okay, let's just sing a song for these nice folks. Mom and I are going to sing a song about the city that we live in.
That's right. We got a scary little trailer, double wide and painted brown. We've been living in Renton ever since the truck broke down. We're out in Renton, near Boeing Factory. Yeah, we're out in Renton. It's a fine place to be. Seahawks train in Renton. Jimi Hendrix is buried here. And Clint Eastwood was a lifeguard back in 50 and 53. We're out in Renton. We got our own Walmart and IKEA. Yeah, we're out in Renton. Mama stole a shopping cart.
Oh, folks, there is one real important piece of information that we forgot to share with you. Mama has been married 13 times.
12. It is only 12.
No, I believe you forgot about Tim Iman.
I did not forget about Tim Iman. Tim Iman, do not count. We did not get enough signatures. We got a scary little trailer. Double wide and painted brown. We've been living in Renton ever since the truck broke down. We're out in Renton. They say we don't got class. Yeah, we're out in Renton. Bellevue, you can kiss my ass.
What's it gonna be? Baby, baby, baby. Is it him? Or is it me? Make me waste my time. Don't make me lose my mind, babe, baby, baby, baby. Can't you stay with me tonight, baby, baby, baby? Don't my kisses please you right? You were so hard to find, the beautiful ones that hurt you every time. And if I told you, baby, that I was in love with you, we got married, wouldn't that be cool? You make me so confused. Beautiful one,
to life the vision in one's mind. The beautiful ones always smash the picture. Always, every time. The beautiful ones always smash the picture. Always, every time. I said the beautiful ones always smash the picture. And always, every
with the Sandbox Radio Orchestra. John's Christmas by A.A. Milne.
My loving people,
King John was not a good man. He had his little ways. And sometimes no one spoke to him for days and days and days. And men who came across him when walking in the town gave him a supercilious stare or passed with noses in the air. And bad King John stood dumbly there, blushing beneath his crown.
King John was not a good man.
Not a bad kid!
King John sucks!
Hey!
He took my insurance!
No, I didn't!
And no good friends had he. He stayed in every afternoon, but no one came to tea. And round about December, the cards upon his shelf, which wished him lots of Christmas cheer and fortune in the coming year, were never from his near and dear, but only from himself.
King John was not a good man.
Where's his birth certificate?
Shut it! Yet, had his hopes and fears, they'd given him no present now for years.
And years.
And years.
But every year at Christmas, while minstrels stood about collecting tributes from the young for all the songs they might have sung, he stole away upstairs and hung a hopeful stocking out.
Oh, so many stairs in this castle.
King John was not a good man. He lived his life aloof. Alone, he thought a message out while climbing up the roof.
Oof!
He wrote it down and propped it against the chimney stack.
To all and sundry, near and far, F. Christmas in particular.
And signed it not Johannes R., but very humbly,
Jack. I want some crackers, and I want some candy. I think a box of chocolates would come in handy. I don't mind oranges. I do like nuts, and I should like a pocket knife that really cuts. And oh, Father Christmas, if you love me at all, bring me a big red India rubber ball.
King John was not a good man. He wrote the message out and got him to his room again, descending by the spout. And all that night he lay there, a prey to hopes and fears.
What's that? I think that's him coming now!
Anxiety bedewed his brow.
He'll bring one present anyhow. The first I've had for years. Forget about the crackers. And forget about the candy. I'm sure a box of chocolates would never come in handy. I don't like oranges. I don't want nuts. And I have got a pocket knife that almost cuts. But, oh... Father Christmas, if you love me at all, bring me a big red India rubber ball. Yeah!
King John was not a good man.
All right, they get it already.
Next morning, when the sun rose up to tell a waiting world that Christmas had begun, and people seized their stockings and opened them with glee. Oh! Ooh! Ah! And crackers, toys, and games appeared, and lips with sticky sweets were smeared.
King John said grimly, "As I feared, nothing again for me." I did want crackers, and I did want candy. I know a box of chocolates would come in handy. I do love oranges. I did want nuts. I haven't got a pocket knife, not one that cuts. And oh, if Father Christmas had loved me at all, he would have brought a big red India rubber ball.
King John stood by the window and frowned to see below the happy bands of boys and girls all playing in the snow. A while he stood there watching and envying them all.
When through the window, big and red, there hurtled by his royal head
and bounced and fell upon the bed
an India rubber ball!
Aww. Oops! Oh, we love you, King John!
Merry Christmas!
And oh, Father Christmas, my blessings on you fall for bringing me a big red India rubber ball!
Nicely done, audience. Well done.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sandbox Radio. This show is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Check out our website, sandboxradio.org, and click on Support to find out how to make a donation. And mark your calendars for the next live show coming up on April 27th at ACT. Ticket and show information online at acttheater.org. Now back to Epiphany and the final episode of Markheim.
Previously on Markheim.
Black Francis bolts again out along the pier, and without even a hesitation or look back, he dives right off the end.
I'm going in after him.
No, Liv, you'll drown.
Then you go.
I can't go in water.
So he's just gone?
I was trying to help him, but...
You're not an angel. You're just another sick freak.
You know I've been looking to retire for a while now.
Who's stopping you, Sam?
Not alone.
So, take someone with you.
Not someone, Iafiel. You.
A lanky giant as tall as Hammering Man crawls out of Elliott Bay, ducks his bobbling head under the viaduct, and stalks on toward the harbor steps. From above me, demons shriek, unleashing unholy hellfire, but it barely slows the Neville down. He's coming right for me, and as he stalks up the steps over me, he looks down into me with fish-blind eyes.
Kozuna.
Five burning demons stick to him like glowing ticks as he walks up into the city. Christ, I wish I was dreaming.
And now, the final episode of Markheim by Paul Mullen.
I'm a Markheim, a sort of angel. Markheims are the black ops. We do things other angels can't or won't. The fix upstairs pulled me out of retirement for a mission down in this soggy town. But when it was done, I didn't go back. I had questions. Now I'm walking neutral in Seattle, half fallen, looking for the answers in what we angels call the show. But I gotta watch my back, because things can always get uglier. I'm on the roof of some huge stone fortress or temple. I'm wearing some sort of robe. It's the show, for sure, but something's different. I'm different. I can die. I'm sure of it. I'm sure if I leap from this parapet jutting hundreds of cubits into the air, I won't fly. I'll fall, and then I'll be over. Dream on, Markheim, because that's exactly what this is. Another dream. Damn it.
Markheim! You made it.
Sam, I guess I shouldn't be surprised to see you.
You should never be surprised to see me. This is my show. Besides, haven't you been looking for me, hoping I'll help your poor dog?
He's not my dog.
Fine, your girlfriend's dog.
She's not my girlfriend.
When are you going to open your eyes, Markheim?
I should. Then I'd know you're just a dream.
You sure about that?
You've been captured, blissed, and turned.
You sure about that?
As sure as anything.
Yeah? You ever read any meat poetry?
What?
Most of it's crap, but there's this Irish guy I like. Kavanaugh. Horrible drunk. Pretty obscure. He wrote, "When the angel woos the clay, he'll lose his wings at the dawn of the day."
What are you trying to tell me?
I'm trying to tell you that there's always a way out.
For you or me?
Look, you need to understand that you've made the rookiest mistake of any angel sent down to the show. You've fallen in love with the world. It happens. But like every newbie from the fix, you've forgotten the most important thing.
What's that, Sam?
The world is mine.
I thought the world was given to the meat.
Who told you that?
You know who.
You seen much of him lately?
No.
Then take my advice and stick with what you know!
Sam leans sideways and dives off the edge of the parapet as if he were an aqua ballerina in some old-timey meat movie. He falls so far and fast, I never see him hit the desert floor. He had no wings.
Mark! Mark, what are you doing?
Liv.
You're sleeping? Black Francis is dead, and you're passed out like some drunk in the street?
I'm sorry, Liv.
Here. I begged enough to buy us a crappy tuna sandwich to split. The Dr. Pepper's all mine, though.
Liv, I told you, I don't eat.
Right, I forgot. You're an angel, and yet somehow incapable of performing a miracle that would have saved my dog from drowning.
I told you to stay away from him. You wouldn't listen.
He's my goddamn dog, Mark.
He was your dog. And he was goddamned, actually. No, no fault of his, though.
Yeah, yeah, just eat.
I don't eat, Liv.
Then just shut up. Can you do that?
Liv!
What do you know, Markheim?
Next to nothing, Smiley. It's been a while.
Yeah, maybe not long enough. You know that girl has to get off the streets, right? Her days are numbered if she don't.
What can I do, Smiley? I'm an angel, not some meat cop or something.
Well, that angel shit means nothing to me. Help Liv. You owe her that much for her damn dog.
What do you want me to do?
Figure it out, Markheim. Be a man.
Or what?
I ain't trying to threaten you, Markheim. I've been nothing but friendly. But your power's limited in these parts. Always has been. You're just passing through. This shit's older than you.
And then Smiley's gone. Like he always is. There out of nowhere and then just gone. But I'm not alone for long.
Bars up there and there, right and left, alternating with the smokers. This is the choke point, angels and demons. Nothing moves up out of this section of harbor that doesn't go through the stairway.
Well, look who it is. You sure don't like to leave your comfort zone, do you, Markheim?
These are my stairs since I got to the show.
Well, I got bad news, Marky. We're creating a Nephilim slaughter pen here.
Okay, I want demon-angel duels on the edge of every building.
Seriously, Mark, you're not going to want to be here. You got to move.
Save it. Sam gave me this post. If Sam wants me to abandon it, he can come tell me himself.
Sam? Sam's gone, Mark.
Yeah, I know, he flipped, but I'm still under orders.
I'm not talking flipped. I'm talking gone. Happened 3 nights ago, Columbia River Gorge. You know these Nephilim get dropped, right?
I heard it takes an angel and a demon working as a team. They burn and bliss them for as long as it takes as the Nephil walks.
Yep. When it's all over, there's nothing left of the angel, demon, or Nephil. As the Satan, Sam could choose which form he took, and he chose demon. I'll let you take a wild flying guess who his angel partner was.
You ready, love?
Yes.
You want this?
I want this.
We'll be gone completely. Both of us.
We'll be together.
Truth. You see it down there? Lumbering across the I-90 bridge.
I see it.
Shall we?
Come. Take my hand.
Your orders are rescinded. Move on.
I got nowhere else to go.
You know what? I don't have time for this shit. You suit yourself, Marky. When you get sucked into the mix, it's on you.
That's all I've ever been, sucked into the mix.
Let's go, let's go. The first wave has been spotted.
It wasn't long before the first dripping giant started lumbering up out of the harbor. The POWs open up, prodding them with bursts of unbearable bliss so that the Nephilim begin gathering into a mass centered at the bottom of the steps. And then they climb. Blasts of hellfire from demon batteries only just slow them down. Some are already passing me where I sit about halfway up the steps. When they look down and see me, they offer no violence, just the same salutations over and over.
Brother, cousin,
kid.
I see Liv walking towards me through the congealing crowd of giants. She's oblivious. Some humans see us, some don't. Some only see some of us, and only at certain times. Liv's one of those. The Nephilim clearly aren't registering for her.
Hi.
Liv, get out of here.
I came to say I was sorry.
You're forgiven. Go.
No. I'm tired of you pushing me away. Liv, do this. Liv, do that. Stay away from Stank. Stay away from Didge. Go to Portland. Go to Everett. From now on, I'm gonna stay put. Right here with you.
I wouldn't.
Why? Give me one good reason.
You won't believe me. You can't see it.
Then describe it.
I see the whole city under attack. I see long-necked, drowned giants crawling out of the water and up these steps in hordes. I see them being blasted with fire and light, but it's not enough to stop them. I see the angel-demon duos swooping down to burn them, but again, there aren't enough.
Mark.
And I can't do anything. I'm just one lousy talker, Markheim. And you can't talk to these things.
Mark.
What?
Kiss me.
What?
Just kiss me.
Why?
Because you want to.
What?
And I want you to.
You're a girl.
I'm not a girl. I'm Liv. I've been through shit. And I'm a woman.
But...
just kiss me. Once.
Well, why don't you just kiss me?
It doesn't work that way. You have to do it.
What difference would it make?
What do you have to lose?
Good question. And I looked at her. This young girl. Woman, whatever. I'm looking in her eyes. And they go somewhere. Somewhere I don't understand, but I want to go there, where her eyes lead. And I figure she's right. What do I have to lose? As the moronic, avenging army of drowned giants floods up into the show, I lean forward and kiss this girl and... What?
Well?
It was...
yeah?
It's all...
it's all what?
I look around and everything that was happening. The war, the fire, the light, the Nephilim. Every last holy and unholy thing is... gone. And all that's left is these steps in this city. And this pretty clear-eyed girl in the show. No... the world.
Mark, it's all what?
Gone.
What's gone, Mark?
My reason for being here.
Oh, that bad, huh?
No. Not bad, Liv. It's the best thing that could ever happen to me or anyone, and it's because of you. Because of you, Liv, I know, in my bones, in my actual, miraculous bones, I can feel it.
Feel what?
I can die now.
Oh. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On Raglan Road of an autumn day, I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare, that I might someday rue. I saw the danger and I passed along the enchanted way, and I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day. her walking now, and away from me so hurriedly, my reason must allow that I had loved not as I should, a creature made of clay. When the angel woos the clay, he'll lose his wings at the dawn of day. When the angel woos his clay, he'll lose his wings at the dawn.
And that concludes Paul Mullen's series Markheim. On behalf of the Fix, the Crisp, and all points in between, we thank you for your attention and certainly hope you'll continue to enjoy the show. A Kidnapped Santa Claus, adapted from the story by L. Frank Baum.
Santa Claus lives in the Laughing Valley, where stands the big rambling castle in which his toys are manufactured. His workmen, selected from the Rills, Nukes, Pixies and fairies live with him, and everyone is as busy and as happy and as content as can be from one year's end to another. One would think that our good old Santa Claus, who devotes his days to making children happy, would have no enemies at all on the earth. But the demons who live in the mountain caves grew to hate Santa very much, and all for the simple reason that he made children happy.
I'm really getting lonesome,
said the demon of selfishness.
Santa Claus distributes so many pretty Christmas gifts to all the children that they become happy and generous and keep away from my cave.
I'm having the same trouble,
rejoined the demon of envy.
The little ones seem quite content with Santa Claus, and there are few indeed that I can coax to become envious.
And that makes it bad for me,
declared the demon of hatred.
For if no children pass through the caves of selfishness and envy, none can get to my cavern.
If children do not visit your caves, they have no need to visit mine,
said the demon of repentance, who was gentle, refined, and not so disagreeable as the others.
I am quite as neglected as you are.
Yeah, right.
Santa is simply ruining our business, and something must be done at once.
Yeah!
But what to do? They knew that Santa worked all through the year in his castle at the Laughing Valley, and at first they resolved to try to lure him into their caves that they might lead him on to destruction. So, while Santa was busily at work the next day, surrounded by his little assistants,
the Nukes,
Pixies,
and fairies,
selfishness came to Santa's castle and said,
"Why, Santa, these toys are wonderfully bright and pretty. It's a pity to give them to children who break and destroy them so quickly."
Nonsense! If I can make them happy for one day in the year, I am quite content.
So selfishness went back to the others.
I have failed, for Santa Claus is not at all selfish.
Envy tried next.
The toy shops make toys by machinery much quicker than you can make them by hand, and they sell them for money, while you get nothing for all your hard work.
But Santa refused to be envious.
I can supply the little ones but once a year on Christmas Eve, for the children are many and I am but one. I like the toy shops and am glad to see them prosper.
My turn,
said Hatred.
In the world are a good many who do not believe in you, Santa Claus. You ought to be revenged upon them for their evil words.
Poor things. I'd much rather help them any day than injure them.
Indeed, the demons could not tempt old Santa Claus in any way. So they abandoned sweet words and determined to use force. Now, it was well known that no harm can come to Santa while he is in the Laughing Valley, for
the fairies
and nooks
and pixies
all protect him. But on the night before Christmas, he drives his reindeer out into the big world. So the demons laid their plans and awaited the arrival of Christmas Eve.
It's all according to plan.
It is.
Santa! Sped away out of the valley into the great world beyond. The reindeer dashed along so swiftly that their feet scarcely seemed to touch the snow-covered ground. Suddenly, a rope shot through the moonlight, and a big noose settled over the arms and body of Santa Claus grew tight and jerked him from the seat of the sleigh into a snowbank. While the reindeer rushed onward with the load of toys and carried it quickly out of sight and sound. The wicked demons bound Santa tightly and carried the kidnapped man away to their mountains, where they chained him to the rocky wall so that he could not escape.
What will the children do now? Now they will cry and scold and storm.
And flock to our caves of selfishness.
And envy.
And hatred.
Now, it so chanced that on this Christmas Eve, the good Santa Claus had taken with him in his sleigh
Peter the Nook,
Kilter the Pixie,
and a small fairy named
Whisk.
His favorite assistants. Little Whisk stuck his head out from underneath the seat and found Santa Claus gone.
Whoa! What shall we do?
We must go back at once and find our master.
No, no! There will not be time to get the toys to the children before morning, and that would grieve Santa Claus more than anything else.
Then our first duty is to get the toys distributed as carefully as if Santa Claus were himself present.
And so they did, working as swiftly as possible, all the while wondering what had happened to their master. When Christmas Day dawned, the demons said,
"The children are waking up, Santa. They're waking up to find their stockings empty.
Now they will quarrel and wail and stamp their feet in anger.
Our caves will be full today, old Santa. Our caves are sure to be full."
But Santa held fast. Even in his helpless condition, his courage did not forsake him.
"You three are only trying to make mischief and trouble. I have faith in my little assistants and the love of the children."
And the demons abandoned their taunts and went away in defeat.
Good morning, Santa.
Why, good morning, dear Repentance. I'm glad to see you. Don't be shy. Come in.
My fellow demons don't trust me very much, but it's morning now, and the mischief is done.
That is true. Christmas Eve is past, and for the first time in centuries, I have not visited my children.
I imagine the little ones will be greatly disappointed.
Well, that cannot be helped now.
Yes. It's too late to remedy the evil we've done. But repentance, you know, can come only after an evil thought or deed. For in the beginning, there is nothing to repent of.
So I understand. Those who avoid evil need never visit your cave.
That is true. And since I sincerely regret my share in your capture, I am going to permit you to escape. Come, you are going to lead me through the cave of repentance today.
And she unlocked the chains, and they walked together through a long tunnel, and they both emerged in the cave of repentance.
I hope you will forgive me. I'm not really bad, you know.
Of course I forgive you. You accomplish a great deal of good in the world.
And I'm sure the world would be a dreary place without you.
And with that, repentance opened the back door of her cave and let in a flood of sunshine.
Merry Christmas to you.
And a Merry Christmas to you.
Soon Santa was on his way home to the Laughing Valley.
Dear Master, we've come to rescue you and punish the demons who had dared take you away from us.
Thank you, my dear little friends, for your support, but it is useless to pursue the demons. Have an important place in the world, and they should never be destroyed.
Then Whisk related the events of the night and how they had delivered all the gifts.
We really did very well, for I found little unhappiness among the children this morning. Still, you must not get captured again, my dear master, for we might not be so fortunate another time.
And they clustered around their master, dancing with glee at his safe return. As for the wicked demons of the caves, they were filled with anger and chagrin when they found that their clever capture of Santa had come to naught. Indeed, no one on that Christmas day appeared to be at all selfish.
Aww.
Or envious. Or hateful. So the demons never again attempted to interfere with Santa's journey on Christmas Eve.
Thank you.
listening to Sandbox Radio. Controlling Interest by Wayne Rawley.
This is Jack. Yeah, what can I do for you, Fred? I've got a meeting starting, like, right now. Fred, honestly, let me stop you right there. I don't know if you're ready. Well, we're going to swing. Yes, Fred, on the swings. That is where you swing, see? That's what I'm talking about. Well, let me ask you this. Can you pump?
Jack, we're getting creamed out there.
Yeah, just a second, Brad. Yes, Fred, pump. Pump. Can you propel the swing back and forth under your own power without having to be pushed by a second party? Don't mess with me, Fred. You know what it means. Okay, look, Fred, I have to go. You come around lunch recess, we'll give you a go. But listen to me, Fred. I don't want to see you eating your boogers. Because we're not doing that anymore. We're eight now. Okay, well, okay, see you then. Fred still eats his boogers.
Gross.
What's up?
We're getting cremated out there, Jack. They got ghost runners on every base, and they keep changing where second is. One minute it's the garage door, the next minute it's the side hedge. It's like they're just making it up as they go along.
Yeah. Well, they're big kids, Brad. It's important we give them the impression that we're happy they're even letting us play.
I'm telling you, Stephen.
I'm sorry, that sounds extreme.
I'm telling you, ask Jack.
Jack, I'm sorry. I missed last week. Is it true we aren't eating our boogers anymore?
It's true, we're not.
That sounds extreme.
Sit down, gentlemen.
So what are we supposed to do with them?
We don't know yet. For now, just leave them in there.
But we're looking into it. I'm talking to an 11-year-old says he can flick them on people.
Who the hell has got that kind of hand-eye coordination?
Gentlemen, enough. We aren't here to discuss old business.
What are we here to discuss, Jack?
You know I'm scheduled to smash an anthill today.
I know.
I've got a Lunchable at 3.
I know, fellas. Your time is valuable. I understand that. I have something very important I need to discuss with you. I've been thinking about it since, like, this morning.
I'm sorry. Wasn't this morning, like, a bazillion years ago?
I know. Yes, it was. That's why I asked you guys to come over today. I've been thinking about this. I want to discuss the possibility of us liking girls.
Gay. That's gay. You are gay. You are a gay person for saying that.
I don't think you're using that term correctly, Steve.
Yes, I am.
Do you even know what gay means?
It means I'm uncomfortable. That I'm feeling discomfort. Anything that takes me out of my immediate comfort zone is a gay thing. A thing that is gay.
No, that's not right. That's
David!
Not...
What?
Back me up on this.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of in the weeds here.
Gentlemen, please. I think we should stick to the issue on the table, namely Jack's proposal that... what I'm hearing you say, Jack, is that we somehow stop hating girls and begin, what, liking them?
Yes, Brad, thank you.
Okay, I don't know if I'm gay, but... I am definitely uncomfortable with this, and I'll tell you why. Number one... Number one, there is the whole size thing. I mean, they are just bigger than we are. Physically taller, and that's new. Okay, that's a recent thing, and it frightens me. And number two, they seem to be... What is the word? Smarter. than we are. More advanced somehow.
Not to mention the whole cootie issue.
That is unsubstantiated.
Says who, Jack? Unsubstantiated? Says who? Where is this coming from?
Look, I know this is new territory for all of us, but David, look at it this way, okay? Your mommy. You know your mommy.
Yes, Jack, I know my mommy.
Okay, well, your mommy is a girl, right?
I don't know that.
Well, she is. Trust me, she is.
It's true, David. Her boobies make her a girl.
So gay.
What's your point?
Look, my point is that I have a feeling that they just may have something to offer us, and I think we ought to hear them out.
Hear them out?
They've sent representatives. Two representatives to discuss what would be involved.
Yeah, I don't know. I am very uncomfortable with this.
What? Are we going to kiss them? On the mouth? Is that... What exactly do you think is going to happen?
Guys, come on. We can do this. I believe in Jack. This is the guy who taught us how to make a shadow on the ceiling that looks like a butt. Using only a flashlight and our knuckles.
Yeah, this is true.
Huh? Now, we run this block, and we have all day. We can do this. This is easy. Game face. Come on.
Lois, could you send in the,
girls?
Girls? Please, the girls.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon, ladies. Please come in. Welcome. Can I get you some Legos or anything?
Thank you, no. My name is Ashley with an EY. My daddy's a policeman, and I'm 9. This is my associate, Bethany.
I can do short division.
Please, sit down.
Hey, knock it off. He pulled my hair.
It wasn't me, wasn't me.
Oh, no, wait.
Very good. Have a nice day, gentlemen.
Oh, Stephen, please.
What?
Don't pull her hair.
Don't pull her hair? I'm confused.
Please, let's not step off on the wrong foot here. That won't happen again, will it? Please, don't go. We would like to talk.
Fine. Let's get started. We understand you're interested in liking us.
We are interested in exploring that possibility. Yes.
Excellent. Bethany?
I know how to type.
Thank you.
And I speak French.
What exactly are you looking for?
Your complete and undivided attention.
Well, you've got it.
Yes, of course. I do. No. I mean your complete and undivided attention until the end of time.
Excuse me?
In accordance with the terms of the agreement I've just handed you, we will be occupying your every thought, motivation, and decision-making process from the moment you wake up in the morning until the moment you fall asleep at night. At which point, we will play a major role in 9 out of 10 of your dreams. We do allow one wild card dream, usually a sports dream or flying dream of some type. That is completely up to you, of course. But everything else becomes, for all intents and purposes, about us.
Love?
Right. Until, of course, you fall in love with one of us. Then that number increases to 10. Out of 10.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not falling in love with anybody.
Right. Bethany, am I missing anything?
Stop doing stupid stuff.
Right. And you will have to stop doing stupid stuff, like playing Star Wars and making laser beam noises with your mouths.
Yeah, okay, I'm very sorry. I'm just not comfortable with this.
Okay, so what if I don't even care? I mean, like, what if I don't even want to stop playing Star Wars? What if I don't even care if I think about you or not? Like, if I say, like, I don't even care?
I'm afraid that won't be possible.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I was just wondering. What's in it for us? I'm just thinking out loud here at this point. But it seems like... I mean, so what is it for us, exactly?
Knowledge, mostly.
Ah. See, we already know everything.
Right. So let me ask you a question then. Do you ride the school bus?
Yeah.
Where do you get off?
I get off in front of my house.
You do?
Yeah.
You get off in front of your house?
Yeah.
You get off in front of your house.
What? Yes!
Dude, you get off in front of your house?
What? I mean, the bus! What?
Dude gets off in front of his house.
Wait a minute. Am I crazy? Or did you just get Brad to admit in front of all of us that he masturbates in public outside of his own house?
Yep.
And you can teach us stuff like that?
That was a parlor trick.
Oh, yeah? So what? Like you're so smart? What else? What else do you know?
We know where babies come from.
Whoa. Yeah? So what? Everyone knows where babies come from. They come from the garden with the morning dew.
Actually, no.
Studies have shown that to be a misconception.
Jack, I'm very uncomfortable with this.
Gay.
Steven!
I meant get off the bus. I just want everyone to know I meant get off the bus.
Yeah. Ladies, I think we're going to need some time to think. This is a lot to consider. Wow, we really do appreciate you coming by.
And of course, there is the possibility. No guarantees, of course, but if you play your cards right, there is the possibility that someday you might possibly be able to see one of us without a shirt on.
You mean like right in front of us? Like right there in person? Or like what?
No guarantees, but possibly.
Stephen? Jack? David? Brad?
Yes, well, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. We will definitely be in touch.
I can write cursive.
Jack, say, if it's all the same to you, I think I'm going to skip the anthill today.
Yeah, David, that would be fine. Take the rest of the day off.
Good thing we stopped eating our boogers, huh?
Yeah, good timing on that.
I have to go home and comb my hair and lose some weight.
Jack? How long do you think it will be before we, actually get to see him without shirts on?
I don't know, Brad. I wish I could tell you. I just don't know.
Yeah. I don't even care.
Yeah, me either. I don't care either.
Well, that's our show for tonight. Tonight's episode was written by Scott August. Elizabeth Effort, Paul Mullen, and Wayne Rawley. We'd like to thank Act Theater for having us, and special thanks to John Langs and Alyssa Beyer from Central Heating Lab and the marvelous crew here in the gorgeous Falls Theater. In tonight's episode, the Sandbox Radio players were
Eric Ray Anderson,
Sarah Harlett,
Mick Kuhlman,
Nick Donner,
Charles Leggett,
Lisa Holland,
Jason Marr,
Annette Titonghi,
David Natale,
Jean-John Walsh,
Catherine Van Meter,
Richard Simon.
And please give it up one more time for Lisa Koch and Peggy Platt. Musical guest, Cascadia McMahon. Divine Nancy Pearl! And how about that Sandbox Radio Orchestra, Dan Tierney on drums? Dave Pascal on the bass! Brad Whitmer, accordion and clarinet! And on the keys, our maestro and composer, Jose Juicy Goza. Susie Butler and Paul Abuse. And this show was recorded by Brendan Hogan. And I'm your host for Sandbox Radio, Leslie Law. So, for this last song, Catherine and Annette are bringing out our lyric cards. We hope you'll sing along. You know the tune.
This episode was written by Scott Augustin, Elizabeth Heffron, Paul Mullen, and Wayne Rawley. The King's Christmas was adapted by Richard Ziman, and A Kidnapped Santa Claus was adapted by yours truly, Leslie Law. The performance was recorded by Brendan Hogan and mixed by Dave Pascal. Our stage managers were Paulette Buse and Susie Butler, with sound by Max Langley and lights by Dave Meisner. Dig deeper into Sandbox Radio at our website, sandboxradio.org, where you can find the podcast archive. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and find the podcast in iTunes and Stitcher. See you at the next live show, and thanks for listening.